Hi, and welcome to the Chapter 6 Free Talk for Tokyo Demons. I'm Rebecca Scoble, the audio director, and today I'm with...
I'm Leanne, I'm the writer.
I'm Jill, I'm the voice actor for Emmy Honda and Mai Endo.
Dallas, and I am playing Kiyoshi Honda. I think it flows really well. Kiyoshi Honda. I like that. That's a nice
Kiyoshi Honda?
That one's got a nice ring.
It means, like, innocent or something. I don't know. It was some very gentle...
Yeah, Kyo means...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was some kind of sweet.
Like, pure...
Yeah, because Sachi means, like, happiness. Like, a lot of the names
yeah,
are...
Yeah, and Sachi Ishida is also the name of a porn actress.
Yeah, we found out a porn actress. Yeah.
Wow.
Sorry, tangent.
Okay, so now that we're done with the tangent, I'm here with Dallas and Jill, who play the siblings, Kyoshi and Emmy, who in this last chapter, Emmy was sort of revealed to be Kyoshi's sister, who really, really screwed up that whole relationship thing. As you may have noticed, Kyoshi... as a character, gets a lot of the emotional scenes, the really happy parts and the really sad parts, and the parts where you have to pretend that you were shot up with horrible super drugs and things like that. And part of the reason that we're able to write those kinds of scenes is because Dallas is, let's say, a slightly more established actor than most of our cast. He has a bit more of an actual acting background, and he's managed to kind of... we can tell him to hyperventilate or start crying on command, and it goes really, really well.
Or kiss and puke.
Kiss and puke, yeah. Vomiting, turning into crying is actually Lan's job, yeah. But you can make out with people and throw up and, mm-hmm. yeah, all that sort of thing.
Anything. That's what's so great about it, that when we had the earlier chapters, and we cast most of the drama around, you know, chapter 3 or so, and then I modified the writing based on what I thought the actors could handle, but whenever it was time for Kyoshi, I'm like, all the feelings are coming out now, because, like, Dallas can handle it, so let's have a little fun. And I think the kids have really been enjoying it. I think that you add an element of this sort of, like, wild energy that's different from a lot of the other, you know, mostly amateur cast, but it's nice having sort of a vet.
Well, I mean, it's the actor's gift to actually have good material. And aww. The older I'm getting into this career, I'm 24, but the older I get into it, I realize that it's so much, there's so much less art in it than I'm realizing. And that there's so much show up, have a face, and say some lines, and, you know, there's always... for the people that went to theater school and did lots of theater and artsy stuff in their youth, I'm like myself, I'm always itching to do creatives material, and so it's nice to have a nice creative output, which is this one.
Mm. Well, we've definitely noticed that when we ask you to do a particular usually it's something that's pretty emotional, we'll kind of cue you in with things, or you'll do something physical to mirror what you're actually doing, and it's pretty great. Like, we kind of wish we had video, but we don't. So is that sort of is that a method that helps you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think being, well, to change it a little bit, but in the same topic, doing things like the crying and the laughing and everything, a lot of people are really... uncomfortable with it if they haven't done it that much. But once you get into acting for a while, you in a way disassociate yourself with it, but in another way get even more connected to it. I think you desensitize yourself about it, and you realize that it's not really personal. You can cry as a character and you're still not really being vulnerable. The Dallas isn't being vulnerable, his character is, and it's okay. So it's like, I mean, I'm a pretty sensitive person. I don't like confrontation that much, and it upsets me when I have to. But I would love to just have a screaming piss fit with someone and do all this crazy stuff, because it's you don't really take it personally, even though the more you do it, the more personal you get. But I guess going back to your question, you asked about the physical change that takes place. I think that's a common thing in voice acting, where you know, if you look at a video of Robin Williams and all the voice work he's done,
yeah,
he's always got his hands all over the place, and if there's a specific action, like you're up looking at the sky, he'll probably point up into the sky just because it helps. Like right now, you can't see, but I'm doing lots of action. Just explaining myself. It helps you get into it, because all you have is your voice, whereas at all the other types, you have your body, or your at least your face and chest, or whatever. This is just your voice, so you have to do as much as you can to try to carry everything through your voice.
You do a very good job.
We have to say that we had trouble casting Kyoshi at first. Mm-hmm. We didn't know who we were going to get to play that role. We originally sort of talked about maybe Jay Rogers, who ended up playing Toya and Nick, but he gave the worst audition.
It was awful.
Oh, for Kyoshi.
Yeah. It was awful. No, he did really, really great. We didn't realize he had, like, you know, sort of villainous, tough, horrifying characters in him. But we thought, you know, oh, yeah, you know, he's like the jock and he can play a jock. And it just didn't work at all. And we had a couple, everyone who did it sort of ended up going full Keanu. and it didn't really work.
Yeah, because we're like trying to sound a little bit dim, sort of. Mm-hmm. And they were, for some reason, a lot of them took the Keanu Reeves route. It was like a Keanu Reeves impersonation. And they all sounded like they were trying way too hard.
A bit of a dramatic tone. A bit of a monotone, even.
No, it was more like, dude. You know, like,
Bill and Ted style.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Keanu Reeves specifically as Ted, Theodore Logan. first of all, the tone of your voice is perfect. You have sort of a soft edge to it, which is what we wanted and something that Jay does not have. Jay has a much harder sound to his voice. But also, when you manage to kind of do a much subtler portrayal of it, where you just either speak a little bit slower, or you weren't... it wasn't obvious that you were trying to sound
dumb. You were sort of a friend of a friend, and they called you, and you came over, and you're like, hey, guys, and it was just... Oh,
yeah.
It's the Kyoshi voice.
Perfect. Well, because we'd met you once before, but I only remembered you as the curly-haired guy who beat me at Settlers of Catan.
On my first game.
You'd never played it before.
The secret guy in the corner who knew he was going to win halfway through.
Yeah, no, this guy is really good.
But I played amateur, even though I knew I was going to win.
But I didn't, you know, like, I don't normally necessarily register what people's voices sound like, but yeah, when you showed up to audition, and you opened the door, you said, hi, and I was like, oh my god. So it is a perfect, I think it is a perfect storm of sort of, you have the chops and you have the tone and, you know, you were there. As terrible as it is to say, we were out of people. Like,
let's just say that Tokyo Demon's audio as a project has a real problem with, it's limited by the number of men that Leanne and I know.
Yeah.
And she keeps writing more thugs, and it's like, no, why are there 9 thugs in the scene? Who's going to play all these voices?
Well, at this point, it's easier, because now that we're a little bit more established, people are being like, oh, I heard it, I would like to join it, or they have friends of friends, or whatever. But this was very early. This was like, I don't think we'd even release chapter 1, because Kyoshi's in the prologue.
Yeah.
So it was people, it was like...
We had released one scene, which was chosen because it didn't have Kyoshi having any lines in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, as one of the kind of the 4 main characters, I was really disheartened when we couldn't cast him. I was like, what are we going to do? We don't have a production unless, you know, we have him and it's a hard role. So you were, it was very serendipitous that we found you. So.
Well, my sister didn't really tell me the magnitude of the role. She just said, come on in, there's just this random little character to do. She gave this tone, like...
And free pizza, right?
Oh, free pizza, you'll have a quick little thing, and that'll be it. And came in, and this massive binder, highlighted, you know, teal, which is Kyoshi, and there's hundreds of lines. All right.
You know, funny enough, that's what happened with Ayase, our lead.
Yeah.
Mooncloth was told, oh, you know, there's this part, and, you know, she's supposed to be kind of shy or something, so
she
should go audition. And yeah. Like, we get most of our actors through bribing with food and trickery.
At first.
At first, you say.
Yeah, now we have, like, a little money and, like, you know, some... I mean, Dove is doing quite well. Dove, who does Sachi, is doing quite well online with the fangirls and stuff. He was instantly popular. And I had spread the drama... You know, we were reaching out to a couple different communities, and one of the ones I went to was a drama CD community that Jill and I are both a part of. They really like Dallas and Dove as Sachi and Kyoshi. Somebody actually requested, because I mentioned one of them, she's like, you know, I know everybody likes Sachi, but I like Kyoshi and his voice. He sounds so sweet and innocent. And I was like, well, you know, he's a good singer. We're going to have him sing later. She's like, have him sing a duet with Sachi.
And that's your plan, isn't it?
That's a bit much, even for us. We wanted, like, the music has been a little bit slower than we wanted to be because her technology was hindering her, and also just the drama itself was taking so much time. But probably next year we're going to do more promotional, because I would like to get you singing more.
No, I like doing it, so.
I think your little fangirls, they would love it.
Okay, right, so Jill. Back to Jill. Mm-hmm. So you have less experience as an actor. How's it been?
Yeah, it's been pretty good. I remember when you guys asked me to do it, and I was like, yeah, this sounds really cool. And then I think when you're like, oh, just come on over. It's an audition, but, you know, it's informal. And I kind of freaked out, and I looked stuff up on the internet about how to practice for voice acting.
Oh, did you really? Oh.
Yes. I was doing all these exercises, and I'm like, I'm getting hoarse now, so I should stop.
Oh.
Yeah.
So dedicated.
Yeah. And I get stage fright, so it takes me a while to, like, get comfortable enough when we're doing it, but...
You, like, the first recording session you did was a hard one. I think it's when Emmy bursts into tears or something, and in this, because her intro, she's pretty shaky in the beginning, and then she, like...
Yeah, because I'm supposed to be nervous, and then I kind of break down, and
But you didn't really... You were really silly that night. I don't remember if you'd been drinking or there was so
much... No, I think I was sober. I think I was just nervous.
Maybe that was what it... Because you were a little bit, like...
But we were all kind of, like...
Yeah, giggling. It was late at night or something. But you did a really good job. All
right.
And you also have a tone, like, tone-wise. Your voice is perfect for what we wanted. Now, if you'll recall, when she was auditioning, she tried for Nakajima. Do you remember that?
Oh,
it was so cute.
Yeah, no, we have a couple of people. It's like when Dove tried to play villains.
oh, that was when I was there.
Yeah.
Oh, it was hilarious.
He was trying to...
It's like twirly mustache.
Yeah.
He might have been auditioning for, like, Ito or something. Like, one of these guys.
Yeah.
The villain. Just,
I think he was trying to be Toya.
He was trying to be Toya, and he just played it up to the point of absolute ridiculousness. But similar to that, Jill can't play villains, I don't think.
Well, your hardened cop was adorable.
Damn it.
I don't even remember what the Nakajima lines were, but you were I'm Nakajima!
Oh, well.
Look, that's okay. We've joked in previous pre-free talks that a lot of our friends, Dallas aside, because you came in specifically at the end, we had kind of an idea of who we wanted you to be, and we wanted her for Emmy, because I'm like, oh, you're like the big sister in our lives, right? And you sound like such a big sister that you've got sort of that soothing adult, soft-spoken voice to it, and it's good.
And we could just make you sound like a weirdo, because Emmy's kind of a weirdo.
Emmy is a weirdo,
yeah.
And they both are. The Hondas are weird.
So that works as well.
There's a term they use in Japanese when they say, like, a culture is wet. You know, like, they mean, like, emotional. Sort of. I don't know if you've ever heard that. The Japanese claim to be sort of a wet culture. There's a lot of feeling into it. So I always thought of the Hondas as a wet family, that they're all very emotional. And, like, I mean, this comes up in the course of the story itself, but especially later, the better they get to know Kiyoshi, especially. They're like, man, he's a crybaby. Like, you know, for a kid who's, like, 15 or 16, he cries an awful lot. Like,
well, and he's going through some pretty intense things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. But he's sort of around these, like, hardened misanthropes. But no, you're right. He goes through the worst. Definitely. So he has more justification for it. But we even had somebody comment when we went into the beginning of book two. She's like, you know, Kiyoshi's getting on my nerves. Can't he be a man? Or, like, you know, like, man up. Like, it's like, you
know. He's a big softie, too. Like, he has that huge crush on Mai and stuff, which is like a puppy dog.
Yeah.
He's a hopeless romantic.
Yeah.
We went into it a little bit in the side story, which you did. It was that audio short story. Do you remember about Mai? And we wanted to go into it a little bit because... A lot of the time you have these sorts of relationships in fiction where it's like, oh, at the end of the story, when he grows up, he'll win the girl over. That's part of the character arc or whatever. But we wanted to do something very different with this. And this we'll go into a little bit more in the later books, but Mai is very much symbolic of sort of the particular time of his life that he's going through when he's in love with her. So he develops a crush on her under fairly simple circumstances. But when he has a crush on her is when his parents die. So... Him being in love with her was one of those kind of, like, innocent, pure things that he felt that helped him get through that difficult period in his life. So his feelings for her have a lot more to do with him than with her as a person. But at the same time, I didn't want her to be just this symbolic character, because she has kind of her own life and her own issues and stuff, which is why we did that short story, to show kind of her side a little bit. But as he goes through a lot of development... into an adult and going through all these terrible things, and he knows that she's a part of his life that Well, even in Chapter 6, they know that he kind of has to leave behind, that his life has totally changed, and that she is part of his old life that he can't necessarily ever go back to. That it becomes one of these things where, does he really need to be with her to be happy, or was her being there, whether or not she was doing anything, was all that he needed to get through adolescence, that to let him become the man that he'll eventually become. And I don't want to spoil kind of how their love story sort of ends, but there is a psychosexual component to this.
Okay. Alright. So, as most of you have heard, Jill is playing both Kiyoshi's sister and his love interest. Mm-hmm. And Leanne was kind of insistent about this being a really great idea. So, yes, please explain why this is such a great idea.
Well, and this is stuff that, it's not like a huge spoiler or anything, it's stuff that comes up, especially at, like, the beginning of book two, when it's really Kiyoshi and Emmy are sort of connecting, that he doesn't remember her very well, because she left when he was young, but he does remember her voice without really realizing it, because there's a song that she used to sing to him that he remembers, but he doesn't remember that it was her that sang it. And in the opening to Chapter 4, when Dallas was narrating the Kiyoshi going through the death of his parents at that wake, there's that song that plays in the background about halfway through when they start bringing up his sister, which is the lullaby, which is what both of you will be singing in future chapters. And in the short story, we go over how he first met Mai, where she hits him in the face with a soccer ball. You know, like one of these very romantic comedy, but slightly more violent, sort of like whatever. But the first thing he notices about her is he hears her voice when he gets blacked out or whatever and he can't see. And he's like, she has this beautiful voice, but it's...
It sounds like bells.
It sounds like his... the sister that he can't remember. So it's kind of like a subconscious sort of thing. And because, as we discussed, he's a big softy, he's also kind of a mama's boy. He talks about his mother all the time. And, like, you know, I mean, part of it's because he lost his parents very young, right? So, of course, he's going to be very sentimental about that. But part of it is that he's very, you know, his hopeless romanticism is also part of how he's such a family man and misses his mother and all this stuff. So the idea that, like, when he hears this voice that reminds him of his sister, and he can't even make that connection, but he associates it with comfort or love or that sort of thing. So... it was on purpose.
So psychosexual reasons.
Psychosexual reasons, yeah. I know it sounds a little creepy, but, you know, one thing that we wanted to kind of go over in Tokyo Demons is sort of love and intimacy, relationships and sexuality, and how they're sort of intricately connected, and how trying to draw really firm lines between these things isn't really accurate. It's not very realistic. And, you know, also we don't want to go through just kind of the cliché love stories and the cliché family stuff. Although, you know, Kiyoshi and Emmy are going to go through their fair share of sort of sappy sibling stuff, which we started in book two on the site. And the kids seemed to really like that, actually, the fans. They were like, you know, like, oh. Like, a little bit of... when you have ISA and Joe are narrating the story and they're both such misanthropes, you know, mm-hmm. like, they don't have families and they're hardened and loners or whatever, and they just, like, Kiyoshi and Emmy just sort of want a hug, and like even Joey's like
awkwardly.
Yeah. Well, first it's awkward, right? Because there's that big gap between them. But once they cross that, it's like really sappy because they're both crybabies and like super emotional and intimate and all that. But yeah, that was the reason for that. Sorry. Mai doesn't have many lines in the actual book, but you did the short story, right?
Yeah. First thing I did was. She gets drugged or something? I think it's when...
Oh, you're talking about Mai, yeah.
Yeah, the gang.
Oh, Mai. Yeah.
Like, what?
There's no, we're talking about Emmy, yeah. What? It's like, what book are you reading?
No, it's true, because Mai had her memories affected. There was, like, psychic or whatever. So she was kidnapped for a while. She's off screen so much. I mean, we'd always known that Mai was never going to be, like, a really big character in book one. She was sort of, you know, Kiyoshi was word vomiting about her all the time, but... Punching people because of her. Yeah, and that's in the beginning of book two, that's why he goes on his roid rage, is because he's kind of looking for her, because he didn't... after she was kidnapped, he made the exchange, he came back, he never really saw her again. Mm-hmm. So when he's kind of out of his mind... safe. Exactly. So he sort of freaks out at everyone and starts throwing chairs at people. And I think Kiyoshi end up having a little bit of a physical connection.
No, it's happening before. It's pretty intense.
Oh, because you read chapter eight, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was the day that Moonklutz texted me. She's like, fuck you!
She's like, how did you read it?
How did you have to write a wet dream that I have to narrate? Yeah, but even in chapter six, there's a little bit of it. And that moment where he strokes the bug, do you remember there was a very brief, yeah. That one actually we got commented on by multiple people, that they were, like, if they were fans of Aes and Kyoshi as a couple, they were, like, you know, that was the moment that I really wanted them to get together. And I was like, God, that was early. They barely knew each other. There is some stuff that comes with that later, and but Mai is still sort of this issue, right? Because he's been in love with Mai for years, and that's where some of the romantic complications in Book 2 come in. But we won't spoil that. Yeah, we wouldn't have been in Chapter 6 very much, but if you read through 8, it got pretty gross.
But you don't know how Kyoshi feels about any of this yet.
Exactly.
You just know about Aes and how...
Exactly. Well, there's a lot of projection on all sides, right? And that's really the way teenage love is most of the time. There's so much projection. And as it became kind of clear when he was, you know, the way he talks about Mai and how much he loves Mai and all that sort of thing. And then you go into the short story and Mai's not even really straight. Like, she's like maybe vaguely interested in boys sort of thing. But like, he's like, all I have to know is that you give a boy a chance. Like, you know, there's so much projection from everyone. So while we have that short story to show some of his perspective, you're right, and then he doesn't have the perspective at all. Nobody really knows what he's thinking because he's not much of a talker. Mm-hmm. And he gives off weird signals. Just kind of a weirdo.
Yeah, well, he's
aloof.
Yeah. But he's also kind of like huggy and physical.
Yeah.
In the way that can be misconstrued.
Yeah. Well, there are two things about it. When he gets very affectionate, it's very sudden. And a lot of this has to do with his feelings on family and how he had a very close connection with his family. You know, he had a big separation of his family, and he's been kind of more closed and cut off since his... rather, more cold and closed off since his family died. But once he starts connecting with people again, like with Joe and stuff, he starts getting really affectionate, which makes Joe kind of uncomfortable, and he's like, well, you know, I like you well enough. He's also a jock. You know how jocks are just a little bit more used to running into people and stuff? So there's that part in Chapter 7 where he just kind of lifts her in the air and she's like, oh my god, like, don't touch me. So, yeah, he's definitely a little bit. Also, this is going to become an issue of Book 2. Because he's a jock, he doesn't always put clothes on after the shower right away. He kind of wanders around, not really wearing much, and just, you know, the way you wouldn't
mostly,
kind of
mostly to make guys say uncomfortable.
It's most like the only...
Is that in Book 2?
In Book 2, yeah. Okay. Well, partially because they're all living in, like, the church, and there are three girls, one of whom is a lesbian, one of whom is his sister, and the other is Aes. So he's not really thinking. Like, it's mostly boys, so he's not really thinking, but makes everything worse for Aes. And then nobody really knows what if he's coming on to her. It's really unclear and makes everybody really miserable, actually. Which is my favorite. I like the high school romances where everybody's just kind of killing themselves.
Frustrated with each other.
Yeah. Well, because then it's
confused.
Yeah, exactly. But if you don't have that, then the love story doesn't really mean anything once you kind of work through all that and discover sort of what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's got to be an uphill battle. Mm-hmm. I firmly believe in the uphill battle for love. It must be a fight. That's something that Japanese comics really taught me. Love should be a battle, and you have to win it for, like, 45 volumes.
So, thank you guys for coming in, talking to us. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. And we will be back after Chapter 7.
Bye!
Bye! Bye.